taken.
Go ahead.
Okay. There were both positives and negatives in this. On the one hand, the people who came here would come to the temple. And when they come to the temple, they would participate. Because they had to know their neighbors, they had to know people. The temple was their anchor for a while, whether it was sisterhood, whether it was brotherhood. They came, and very logically so, and they were very content. And the most wonderful thing is that you would get these very capable people who weren't absorbed in the outside world tremendously. So Hadassah and Orth and Council got hold of them, and Hadassah, you know, and B'nai B'rith and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they did find that organizational structure was great for them, and they would come up very quickly with ideas, the willingness to work, which on the one hand was great for them, and on the other hand, some of the old timers felt this was coming and going, and who are they to run the show? All of this had to be integrated together. And I think it is. Now, for example, we have kippot, which we put in the back row. Those people who wish to wear kippot can wear kippot. But I remember, after I was here a few years, one of the ushers elected to wear a kippot. And he was called to order by one of the officers, saying, look, you represent our congregation. Our congregation does not wear kippot, so we would prefer for you not to wear it. Well, that was, again, part of the times, part of the experience of the growing up of the community. We even had a showdown fight over whether or not the bar mitzvah bachur could wear a yarmulke.
This was about 1973, I think.
Yes, I imagine so. Just a few years after.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a battle between the old guard, who had settled this as classic reform, and didn't want so much, I don't think the yarmulke bothered them so much as the feeling that they would lose the control of the power, and it would change to an Orthodox community automatically because yarmulkes would be worn. I tried to stay away from resolving this fight, simply helping them to understand the pros and cons. Helping them to understand that the child who wore the yarmulke maybe would not wear it, or wear it or not wear it, was wearing it for the sake of a grandchild, right? Who would be disturbed? Many of the second generation already didn't care and weren't wearing it themselves. But what about this Zaydi who came? We had one unfortunate circumstance, I do remember, where someone came to us and said, before this vote, and said, my child must wear it, because my grandfather is from the Holocaust. And you can't make a decision on the spot at that particular time when the rules hadn't been changed. I said, let me talk to the person. The person wouldn't even come, wouldn't even talk. And it caused a tremendous sense of anger. But these things have to be worked out. Someday I think we'll have a lack of, better not say this too loud, better not be put in records, off. But someday we'll have a rack where people will help themselves to collation. We finally put this to a vote of the convocation, and it was, I think, 90% in favor of it, yielding the right to that. But the strange thing was the principles that were invoked. What were the principles? It's not liberal to issue a can or cannot. All right? It wasn't on the problem of whether or not one should or shouldn't wear the yarmulke, but it's against liberalism. This is America. You have to be free to do what you can do. Well, we had people resign in the midst of this struggle. Not because there was a struggle, but because we shouldn't have even been brought up. There's too many crucial, this is Vietnam, there's, you know, too many crucial things in life. Why do we spend our times on a kippah, not kippah? But that was resolved. Everything was fine. Nothing was happening. And I think we have gradually processed the ritual, the participation in such form that it represents one. And they happen strangely. One day, about 6 months ago, we always have the family come up, the parents and brothers or sisters come up and stand there together and say the Shekhiyama together. By accident, the grandparents came up too. What were we going to do? We said, go back? It would have been very embarrassing. So we let the grandparents stay and kiss the child that was in the sample. Since then, we offered the congregation the choice of having the grandparents stand on one side, parents on the other, ritual takes place on the other side, and at the end, he goes over, she goes over, kiss the baby, the baby, and the mom. It can be Zaydi Baba, it can be grandmother, grandfather, you know, but the feeling of being able to do it at that moment and standing before the ark is okay.
What is the number of families in the congregation?
We have over 600 families. Mm-hmm. And we have about 40 bar bat mitzvahs a year. And they were very afraid, which is very legitimate, that their boys would not sometimes have the bar mitzvah date of their choice. It's tough. It's open field. Whatever is there, should be done.
What percentage of the congregation do you think are somewhat native Pittsburghers and others who are transient? Did you ever break that down?
There's a study on it right now, but I would say it's native Pittsburghers, if you're talking about Squirrel Hill and everything else.
Eastern.
Native Pittsburghers today would be, I think, 70%.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to say of the people who were from the Mount Lebanon mm-hmm. area of Richmond, it would not be there.
Oh, no. There weren't many there.
No.
Mm-hmm. There was another congregation in the South Hills area, Bethel, which was conservative, that was in Beachview and now has a congregation in Mount Lebanon. Could you tell us a little bit about the relationship between?
Yes. They have grown very nicely, mm-hmm. and we have had, in my timeline, an excellent relationship. I have sent people to the synagogue very happily. They have sent people over here when we thought they belonged in one place or the other. We have engaged for at least the last 10 years in a joint Torah weekend, in which one year we bring a scholar from the seminary, one from the Union College, and we meet together. The Jewish Center has participated in it too, and even Pleasant Hills used to come into it, but we found that if they came into it, we had to go out there, and these are always held the second week in February. Now go ask me why. Somehow we have felt that in the midst of the winter, you need something. I mean, you can't have the normal activities, you're always worried about ice and stuff, but if you put it all together, they come snow, they come sleet, they're here. And it's a very exciting renewal in the midst of the winter. And we've never changed. Never changed. And I think never, I don't think they will, because it's not fighting any other competition at that time, it's giving them all the mm-hmm. good social.
And approximately how many families are in their congregation?
I think it's 400, 300, 400 mm-hmm. something in that category. Mm-hmm. Now it's come up very, very nicely.
And do you have any idea of the number of people in the South Hills area, the number of Jews who are unaffiliated?
I would say if we have the figure of the Jewish community out here is 12% of the total.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the total is what, 50,000?
I think less. It's 40,
closer
45.
To 40.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you figure that out yourself. That would still give us almost 5,000 Jews here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so if we have between the two of us 1,000 families, which represent 2.5 people, mm-hmm. then you would figure, and that's without Pleasant Hill, that's without Carnegie Shore, I would figure that there are perhaps closer to 55-60% affiliated here. The unaffiliated, for the most part, are the young newlyweds or the uppies, you know, who are here living between here and the tubes in apartments and so forth. Mm-hmm. But when they settle, will ultimately. Mm-hmm. What has happened to us really is that there has been a slowdown of people coming into here because I think real estate has been very high, and right now it's a bargain, but up until then the interest rates were so high and mm-hmm. so difficult that they would rather remain in Squirrel Hill and not have to schlep back and forth. They're already familiar with territories, there are people there, and there are a lot of private schools there now that they send their children to, whether it's day private schools or private schools that are there. So that the impetus has not been there as much as in the past. And yet, I would say that we pride ourselves on having today the largest religious school in the city, and giving them a good background, as does Bethel. So I think that we're dying to have a segment of the JCC out here. Now there's been an arrangement with the JFCS and they're sending workers out here a couple days a week. There has been a very difficult time because our people aren't going to Squirrel Hill. If there's a speaker, if there's X, if there's Y, they just aren't going. They will, maybe if you get 40, 50 people, that's fine. But in the meantime, for example, with the Holocaust, mm-hmm. at our last Holocaust affair here, held at St. Thomas More mm-hmm. Church, Catholic Church, historic event for us, and held at a time when Bethel Park had that horrible problem, midst of everything, there were 800 people here.
Wow.
Right? At that service. And the speaker was a German pastor from a small community who had done some very fine things. But, you see, we couldn't have touched that by going over some place. And we feel that if we would have our own section of Israel Independence Day, you know, our own. You want to be separate, but yet a part of, and we aren't getting the kind of financing. I've battled for this for years. I have had the feeling, you know, the answer of the Federation is that, you go ahead and do it, we'll welcome it. You build yourself a Federation, you build yourself a JCC, that's marvelous, not a Federation, a JCC. You build it. You have people of funds out here, you build it. But I think it's very short-sighted. I think that a community should invest in the growth of a community in which you're going to have, sooner or later, certain as night follows day, 30-40% of the population will be out there. Now, perhaps there's a feeling that by you're keeping the facilities and the basic program over there, you are sustaining the Jewish community there. It's true. It's been a very positive factor, but yet there should be a place where our kids mix together in a Jewish community of this size so that they would have some of these experiences and these social experiences as Jews. On the other hand, they are already so involved in their school activities and sports and programs that there's much intellectual as well as social facilities for the Jewish kids out, mm-hmm. the kids out here. And, you know, our kids, are in computers, they're in everything mm-hmm. like all of the children. So whether or not it would automatically happen, if it were here, you've got to invest 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. And the Federation, I believe, I'm not mocking Federation, I can understand it. Their feeling is that there are emergencies out there that they have to make. So this has been, I would say, one of the disappointments mm-hmm. in my lifetime is that I have not been here to see what I think should be here. Years back, passed a motion in our congregation that there can never, we can never part with any of this mandacalism for anything but Jewish usage, whether it's the temple, whether it's for an apartment house, whatever it may be, for the aged and so forth. Mm-hmm. This we feel must happen, and we must have it available to us.
You really think this would have a feeling of community, which is lacking?
A very wholesome. Because like every other sisterhood and brotherhood where we work together with Bethel, it's when you're working side by side on something that you really begin to experience. You got to play basketball together on the same team, not as rivals. You've got to do lots of things in this kind of context that I think already have existed naturally for years in school. But you see what happened is when that thing went down the tubes over there, not far from Bnei Israel.
And that in East Liberty, down, the Jewish community Liberty, center.
When that went down the tubes, they came to us and said, well, we can't, after that fiasco, we can't have another one here. As if you could compare the two. So I really was very disturbed. I've made my disturbance quite clear to many people. But the fact also remains, you know, just like in Israel they say, if you are working, if you want reform or conservative to exist, send your people there, right? And I have to confess that my activities, for the most part, has been on the side of the tomb, except I'm just president of the Rabbinic Association. I mean, this is where my efforts have gone. It's been in the non-Jewish community as well as the Jewish community. I was one of the founders of the South Hills Interfaith Ministry here. The hospice here. I only dropped out of these places when they wanted me to go into presidency, and I couldn't give it that kind of time.
Well, there's always been a very important interchange between the non-Jewish community and the Jewish community in the South Hills.
It's been very positive. It really has been very positive. It wasn't, don't forget, we couldn't buy this land that you're sitting on. We couldn't buy it. We had to have a Methodist minister go fight our battle in the commission. And he embarrassed them into, you know, after all, there is no Jewish community here, there is no place. We have Catholics, Protestants, we give them all permission to build. He fought for us. Very liberal, wonderful man. Forget that. But I forget my own name.
But that had to be about 1954, 1955.
Here in 68. Come on, this was built, yes, this was built about 10 years before I came. It's what, 32 years now. The congregation 32 years old.
I was in the last confirmation class outside, which was in 1955. I think the holidays or the confirmation class, certainly in 1956, was held in this site.
But there were other things. We couldn't live in certain Virginia Manor was closed. All of that's been open. I mean, I think there's been, Shem has been wonderful for us because we almost, you know, it's almost like being represented as one of the three major religions, you know, so that we get a third of the attention, a third of the activity, which is, for our size, is really a generous kind of outlook. David Ishu was here before. He used to come and worship almost every Friday night with us. It was just a wonderful one. It's a good community in that respect. Very positive.
Are most of the people in the community Protestant? Would you say a higher proportion of Protestant?
There's a higher proportion of Protestant churches, but you seem to see the Catholic churches are one, whereas the Protestant churches are so many denominations that there isn't a sense of unity among them. In fact, when I came here, there was only a Protestant ministerial association. And I had to work to see that there became an interfaith kind of thing.
Do you have any idea the number of the offspring of Temple Emmanuel that had had intermarriages or mixed marriages?
I have no idea. We've never taken an official count on it.
Does it seem to be right on line with the national trends, or was there something here that the children were able to receive that kept them closer to the fold?
I would say we would have, strangely enough, a probably larger percentage who remain with Jewish names. But yet I would say we're at a third. I would guess at a rough guess, one third. The kids who have been active in our Temple Youth Program, who have been very absorbed in many things, the odds are with them on marrying within the Jewish fold, because when they go to college, they have friends that they've met at PAFTA, at many other things, and that helps. Look, in this whole situation, there are no guarantees. You can be perfectly orthodox and your child eat kosher at Hillel, and they'll meet somebody whose name they won't know. It'll be Bill and John. They don't know the last name, and you can't arbitrate that. You can't, you know, it just happens. And there are no guarantees, in spite of the people who tell you there are. There are. But we have been very active in an outreach program.
Mm-hmm.
While neither of us perform intermarriage, when the intermarriage takes place, we try to interview them before the marriage takes place and help them resolve some of the problems relating to the actual ceremony, even though we won't participate. And then we welcome them. By that time they know us, we welcome them into our synagogue, and we have a group, an outreach group now, of people who have been intermarried, all right, some of whom converted, some didn't, but have gone through this kind of experience. So they meet together. It's just a group, I think, 2 weeks ago on a Friday night that had a Shabbat meal together and talked about the mutual experiences, hostility, one family, the other family, and, you know, put it all together, and I think it helped them to be able to ventilate. The national organization of the union sends people around, wonderful people who have authored books, who have themselves been intermarried, and some converted, and they're very active, and we want to keep the children. We want to put up a fight for the children. And it's very strange. We, who as rabbis, will not perform it, yet we'll argue with the parent once we know that it's going to be, not to lose their kids. So here we are, we won't participate in the ceremony, but we're trying to convince their parents, and they in turn are trying to convince our school of Israel. But something one has to do according to one's own convictions. I would say this, in all of my years here, there's only one couple I know of that's been turned away because I wouldn't officiate. Right? Because if we get a chance to sit down and talk to them, they may be unhappy because we're not going to participate, but they will understand. You see, the statistic isn't out. The statistic can never be out as what would happen, all right? What would happen if everyone participated? It's like putting an automatic kosher seal and welcoming them. In a sense, this is the trend for the other brother, for the other sister. Who knows what would happen if we would all participate? So there is still this slight reservation, you see, that says to them, Consider it. I have already gone to a wedding dinner afterwards with a couple to show that I simply will not endorse the ceremony, but that doesn't disturb my love or affection for these people. And that's I think very important.
You came from a very loving family with your parents and your grandparents. Is there something of that aura that's being lost by living in the suburbs?
It depends. If the family still gathers together, you know, they still will have it. Many of our people, grandparents come in here, we're jammed with them. The place up where they go there. Generally, it's easier today for grandparents to come here where the kids are, because they don't have to take all the toys, they don't have to take the whole Megillah with them. And we have a second day Yontif, and we see many of these families who may be alone as families, but can come to the temple and feel part of it. So I think we're giving them a Seder that may not be the old Seder that's filled with Israeli songs, with music, with participation. And I think they are discovering that the next generation does have the capacity to take over and to give, to teach. This is most important. We're going to be the Zaydis. We're going to be the Barbas. So we have to transmit it.
Well, you already are the Zaydi. Now, I can't believe we've spoken this long and you haven't told us really first about your children and then the grandchildren, which we see pictures all over your study.
Well, my older daughter, both of my daughters married upon graduation from university, both of them. So that they had to go on and struggle to finish school and to start their married life on those particular circumstances and make whatever adjustments they made. For my younger daughter, it was relatively simple because they had met in the 10th grade here at a shulman at our temple. And this was a boy from the conservative synagogue. And at that time, the organizations weren't allowed to meet together. If you were from the shul, you couldn't come to temple youth and vice versa. But we made an exception for this boy because we had done so for his sister who was interested in Israeli dancing and who participated and helped us get into that kind of program. And they started out there. Please, they went to Ohio State, okay? There are a lot of places at Ohio State. Would you believe, by computer, they ended up at the same dorm, one floor below one another. We gave up. What are you going to do? What are you going to tell them? They can't live like that? They can't be that close? But he's a very nice young man. And there's a good intermarriage between the conservative and the reform.
What is your daughter's name?
Daughter's name is Rana, which is sort of an abbreviation for Rina, meaning joy. A very informed. And the younger one is a very active, happy kind of a person. She went to law school, and they both went together because they found a place where their actuarial studies at Nebraska were wonderful for him. He's a very brilliant field of figures, accounts, and science and this. And she went on to law. And he had to stay for an extra year while she was finishing her law degree. And the result was he became very active in insurance and was not one of the major companies which needed his service then. Insurance companies are in Nebraska. So the result was he had a career in the field of actuarial science. And she went into law and they moved to Chicago where both of them had grown up.
Her name is?
Rana Barry Paul. Rana. Rana Sagewitz Ball. She kept, I have no male. This is the last of the Sagewitzes. The last Sagewitz of the total family. So she was Rana Sagewitz Ball.
And your other daughter's name?
So the boy now, the child is Zachary Sagewitz Ball. What a middle name. And my other daughter married a person when he was just going to begin med school. And they too had met after their first year at Wisconsin.
Her name is?
Judith. Judith Abram. H-A-B-E-R. So they went to school to Buffalo. She went on to get a master's while she was at school. Went the first year and then went through getting a master's in social work. And he became not only a doctor there, but became a psychiatrist. And for his last years of psychiatry, he went to Atlantis, the program in Atlantis, so they moved to Atlanta, and that's where they lived there. And they had two lovely children. And funny thing is, we were thinking of something in Atlanta, Florida, because I perhaps could go into divorce mediation. I get the background I worked on now. And I actually had a part-time job available in the field of divorce mediation with an agency. But on the way back, we stopped in Atlanta. We saw the kids and forget it. That was impossible. So we went to that. There, by the way, I will participate as a consultant to ZOA. We're starting a ZOA group there in Atlanta. They have no ZOA group believe it or not. So I do very much at that time. But
you're not going into divorce mediation then?
Divorce mediation, I'll wait for another 4 to 6 months to get settled in for this,
uh-huh.
and then probably we'll work with rabbis and agencies to try to get it through. I'm going to go on 3 things now in counseling. Right? Counseling, there are 3 things that I've dealt with really most of my life, intensively. Really family questions, family problems. Right? Mm-hmm. And they're all involved. Divorce mediation is one of them. It's important to see what you do with your children. No matter if you're divorced or not divorced, you're going to be parents the rest of your life.